This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be.
I'm Pete, and of course I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, what is going on?
Oh, same old, Pete. Just getting through it. Another week in wrestling, huh?
Yeah. Yep, I know, man. I'm 1 week out from CWF FanCon, the Rumble, CWF Rumble. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more. I'm sure we'll get in the CWF section. But if you're on the fence about Cohen, man, we're a week away. It's going to be some great Q&As, a lot of fun people being around. Of course, I mean, CWF, man, we've been reviewing their shows for the last, I guess, last year now, probably about so.
Yeah, Chad was telling me it's been almost an entire year now, which is cool.
Yeah, okay, so there you go. They always turn on a good show, you know, so I'm excited about being there live. A lot of good people are going to be there. Johnny P and JB are the main hosts of the convention and the fan con. Good guys. I'm going to be there. My boy Ben and Josh are going to be there. The couple of the Hales are going to be there. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people to shoot the shit with, and a lot of internet buzz going to be on that show and stuff. And I heard that there's been, I don't know what the record is, I have no clue, but I mean, I heard they have people from like 20 different states showing up for this show and FanCon, which is quite the accomplishment, you know?
Yeah, no, that's some big time stuff, especially with modern wrestling. Not a lot of indie shows get that many people showing up from all over the place.
Yeah, so it's cool. It's just really cool to get people behind it, man. You know, there's definitely a Johnny P and a JB brainchild, but man, it's just really cool to see it all come to fruition. And any part I played in it, I'm just super soaked. And same with you, by just plugging it and you know, it's like the promotion that could. I mean, the company's been around for over 15 years, and now we're getting their first annual FanCon. And hope for many more to come and stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's definitely cool to see it growing. It's cool to, yeah, whatever little role that we play in it is awesome, all in all. Just really excited to see where they go next.
Exactly, exactly. But, man, we're going to switch gears and just want to pass our condolences off to all the fans and family of Lance Russell, one of, and you know, a lot of people say the greatest announcer of all time. I always thought Lance was the greatest ever at being able to host a television show. This incredible performer, really one of those guys in wrestling who seemed real genuine, and he was almost like too good for the wrestling industry, and what a class act the guy was, and always conducted himself in a good manner. And he understood the business and understood so many stuff and how to tell a story through his actions and through his announcing. He was that guy. He always just had that feeling and I think it's like one of the most important skills to have in announcing in anything is credibility. And Lance Russell had that in spades. And it was a guy who I really respected. I got the chance to talk to him once, and it was like just a real honor for me. Really, just a class act all around. Timothy, any thoughts on Lance Russell's passing?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the same. I've always kind of considered him to be probably the best, host commentator type. I've always, obviously, just based on my age, been partial to Jim Ross as well. Just because of, you know, him being the voice of wrestling when I was a kind of a child, or when I was like kind of getting into it and older, but But, you know, going back and appreciating all the stuff that Lance did, you talk about the credibility that he had, you believe everything. I mean, that was, it's really lost now, and it shines through that he was just down to earth. He really was that guy, and even, you know, to the end with his family, inviting everyone, saying that they want fans there. I really appreciated hearing that, the way that they put it. They, you know, for the memorial service, they wanted people there remembering him and having it really have that familial feeling. It just goes to show, even beyond after the end of his life, that they respected his wishes and who he was enough to realize that that's the way he would want it, for his family, you know, his entire family, even his wrestling family, to be there in remembrance of him. It's a real shame to see someone like that go, who may not have been as active in the past few years, but you hear from people still, you know, behind the scenes, we're still getting contact and in contact with him from time to time, even up until the end. So it's just, you know, it's the way it goes. It winds down, but it's a big missing part of the wrestling community now, to just know that he's not there anymore watching over. And in some ways it's that weird thing. You don't have to necessarily see or, you know, hear anything from them, but just knowing that they're there, it makes it feel like everything's being taken care of because, you know, Lance is watching and paying attention and making sure that nothing too bad can happen. Right. It just, it does get kind of scary to think about that he's not there anymore, but, you know, again, condolences and well wishes to the people who really are missing him, the family, the people that are truly close to him. For the rest of us, you know, it's definitely a bummer, but it's got to remember in these times that those are the people who are really suffering.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. I mean, we lost really two great ones in the last couple of weeks, and I remember I always hate to think about it, because always in Bret Hart's book, he always says they pass away in threes, so I hope there's not a third one that really hits home soon, and hope Bret's wrong. But honestly, I've always noticed a lot of those times it does, things do happen in threes. So, but hey, let's move into some action. Were you going to look at the Nova Pro show that just dropped on Powerbomb TV? You can subscribe, I believe. You can subscribe and get what, 20 free days on it? Is that what it is?
No, Powerbomb TV is so cool. I mean, they're always doing some kind of, you know, giveaway or some kind of make good that they don't even need to be doing make goods for, but making good for somebody else. So I think you can get, if you just sign up regular, I think they always offer you at least 2 weeks free, but I think most of the time you can get a month free, and then sometimes you can get even longer if they're making up for some shindy that decided to burn the fans, and they'll give you some kind of deal. Let's say, like, you bought tickets to Canuck Pro, I think you can get, you know, 2 months or whatever. So stuff like that, I think there's always something, and that just goes to show Powerbomb TV, obviously, for wrestling fans, by wrestling fans. They really are always trying to do something to make sure that you will never feel cheated. So you get a long enough sample to see if you like it before you have to pay for it. So yeah, you can get on there. You could definitely watch this show for free, as well as many other shows for free in the time that you get with them. So yeah, that's kind of the thing with subscribing for Powerbomb.
Yeah, I mean, so this is my first time ever seeing a whole, watching a whole Nova Pro show. This is the Nova Pro, Nova Project 3. It just happened. They've just recently signed a deal with Nova Pro where I'm guessing they're still releasing their shows on SmartMark video. And then and over X amount of time, they're going to be showing the Nova Pro shows. This was they did this one because of some audio difficulties that I really didn't pick up on or anything. Do you know the whole deal behind this?
I don't know the exact deal, but it is pretty relatively what you said. I would say, as someone who, you know, I don't know anything, I won't say that I have any inside information. I would say expect things to change. But as of right now, the deal is Nova Pro shows go up on SmartMark first. You can buy them on VOD. If you really got to see them quick, they're going to be there. And then if you wait, I don't know exactly how long, but at a later date they will show up on Powerbomb TV. So that is the situation now. I don't know anything, but if I was going to make a guess, I would say that the grace period is going to get shorter and shorter, to even to the point of possibly being non-existent. But we'll see how it goes.
Okay, cool. And this, have you watched a lot of Nova Pro?
I've watched a good amount. I haven't watched too many of. I don't think I've watched like the last two or three shows, but I was keeping up on it for a while there. The Eric Royal undefeated streak was the big kind of selling point for me for a while of constantly buying the shows and keeping up on it. Then obviously, I think the last show that I was in the middle of watching was the Cup. They did the, and I can't even think of what the name of it is, but they even reference it on the show here. But it was their big tournament that they did. I didn't quite even get around to finishing that, which is a shame. But that was around the time that I kind of haven't been keeping up with since then.
Okay, and our good buddy Dylan Hales actually commentated on some of the matches here, so that was also cool to hear. He does, he's also the voice of Supps Wrestling and one of the guys behind the big Scenic City Invitational group that promotes what three or four times a year and stuff. So that's cool. I get some takes on that also. We open up with AC Hawk versus the Juggernaut versus Isaiah Frazer versus Ken Dixon. This was technically a dark match, I guess, but they showed it. What were your thoughts here?
I think that they were clearly trying to lend some kind of aura around the Juggernaut from the opening, making him kind of the star. He showed he didn't he has decent power game, no real like mat skills. I think the four guys here in general are obviously a little bit green. I talked about this on the Inspire show we reviewed a while back. I think it's always kind of actually a detriment to be doing these four ways where you're throwing students or inexperienced wrestlers all into a four way to get them on the show, when they really don't have the skills necessary to make a four way dance really work. For me, I always remember a four way dance that I really really appreciated just how good it was, in PWG. That was like Chris Hero, Kyle O'Reilly, I think it was Drake Younger and Johnny Gargano. I think was the four way, and I always remember just how good that match was all around for a four-way, and it's four of the most experienced, talented wrestlers that were going in independent wrestling at the time, and that's what it takes to make one of these really good. I think when you're taking these four guys and you're throwing them in there with probably little time to prepare, the match has some sloppiness. That said, the story, the narrative, was lacking a little bit. I think it was decent seeing. I think it was Frazier and Dixon double teaming, working as a team throughout. Was good. But yeah, I for the most part thought that that this match was fine, but lacking a lot of substance. And then a commentary little nit that I would pick is, I don't know who it was, but it was not Kevin Ford who was on commentary, and he said something about the experience of Ken Dixon may have been a big factor of him winning. He said, you may not have put your money on Kick Dixon, but you pro or you might have should. He said, you might not have put your money on Ken Dixon, but maybe you should have. I would argue that there's no maybe there. He won the match, so you definitely should have put your money on him. Not a maybe, because you want to win your bet, so you should have put your money on the winner. But I mean, whatever. He is a young commentator, probably. That said, I gave the match 1 3/4 stars. It was fine. But like I said, I think these guys would have probably been better off in a tag team match or something along those lines.
Yeah, I'm with you. This match did nothing for me. I didn't really pick up the narrative of the story too much. Two of the guys end up having this like standing strike exchange in a four-way dance. Not where everyone tags in and out, but actually in a four-way dance while two guys watch while two guys beat up each other. Fucking stupid. I've become. I mean, I. You know, this that trope has been prostituted so much right now. The standing and strike exchange with one another, where again we've talked about it. If you do it right, it's a fantastic spot. You just gotta save it. Now it's become almost like it's almost as a freaking. It's about as common as a freaking cross body block or a arm drag at this point, you know, or a headlock. You see the strike exchange more often than a freaking headlock, I think, in wrestling nowadays. And if you don't know how to do it, young wrestlers, I think, should stay away from it. It's something you got to have, I think you got to earn to use, and something that needs to be built to. So having a couple of youngsters doing it in a four-way is just totally missing the boat, and you need to go right back to school and learn your craft a little better. I gave it a star and a quarter. Just didn't do anything for me. Next match was Donovan Donhausen,
yeah.
Okay, Versace Phillips. I would say it's funny, Double D, I saw him live years ago at an Aspire show, and he was in a four-way dance with Ricochet, right? And I thought he was a future blue chipper. Then I saw him work a singles match with Davey Vega, and no one really has bad matches with Davey Vega. He's kind of like, I liken him to the X-Pac on the indies, where the dude can do a little bit of everything. He can mat wrestle, he can brawl, he can do comedy, he can do whatever you need him on the card type of thing. I mean, he's most famous for the besties tag team with Matt Fitchett right now. But Double D had a bad match with Davey Vega. I was like, wow, okay, he's not the blue chipper I thought he was going to be. He was sloppy that match. Here he didn't look bad or anything. Sage Phillips has a kind of weird body type, per se. It's almost like he's like a cross between a regular person and a midget, almost. It's just really strange in a way. It's like, I don't know. I thought the guys had a real solid match. But, you know, again, they didn't really have much time. Again, this was another dark match. So they didn't really have the time to, you know, put all the bells and whistles on. But I thought it was a good, solid, hard-hitting match. 2 stars. But nothing, you know, I'm going to think about by the end of the show. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, pretty similar. I mean, I think it is interesting. I think the smaller guys over the years, like the smaller guys, I don't know if it's just because of like the anti big guy indie wrestling. I don't like WWE, but there is sometimes where I think that being smaller lends itself to being better at like some of the technical parts of wrestling, the physical aspects of it. But it's just, you know, it's just not as impressive, obviously. It's just not as entertaining for some people to watch people that aren't big. So like Sage Phillips, he looks like technically and mechanically pretty good here and there. But I think the problem is both guys were just kind of dull. I mean, there was no drama. There was no personality. There was really, it really just was kind of boring. I mean, I didn't get much out of the match. So yeah, I gave it, you know, a star and 3/4. I thought it was, like I said, mechanically fine, but I didn't get into it. There was no time for me to care about the match at all.
Yep. What do you think of the next match?
The next match, it was Faye Jackson versus Sahara 7. Seven worked over Faye a lot. Faye clearly has a lot of charisma. She's able to get sympathy from the crowd. Everyone buys into her. They like her story. But I didn't find her to be a very dynamic seller, honestly. It felt like a lot of the time where the crowd is getting really into her, she's just laying on the mat getting beat up. I mean, when Faye is able to get going, she just gets kicked back down to the mat. She just keeps being on the mat. And I understand, I think they want her to be kind of this, you know, not spiritual, but not influential either. I'm trying to think of like a sympathetic heel that the crowd gets super into and they love the story. But I just feel like it's her selling is not there for that. And her size, to me, dictates she should work a different style. I mean, she eventually gets up. She hits some charging hip attacks over and over again. Michinoku driver gets the win. But, I mean, to me, this was nothing. I hate to say it, but this felt like a training match. This felt like a match that should be happening in the gym with the trainers explaining to you what you should be doing and how much you're missing. Because I hear a lot of people really like Faye Jackson. I didn't see it. I mean, personality-wise, sure, she comes across really likable. She's probably great at the merch table, but I didn't get much personality in the ring. I gave this 1 star. I think that, like I said, this is this is something that should be happening. This match looked like it should have been happening at the gym, not in front of a crowd.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I went a star 3/4, but I thought the best and most enjoyable part of the match was the headlock work. And I think that a lot of that was because Faye's charisma kind of carried the headlock spots. But other than that, it was just kind of it was just there. Nothing real all that exciting. I thought it was a solid bout, but nothing, again, it's just kind of there. So far, it's been pretty lackluster to start. But, you know, to be fair, the first two were technically dark, you know, matches. And that leads us to Chip Day and Dominic Guarini. And this is a match I was really excited for on paper, and it just didn't quite get there for me. I give it 2.5 stars. I like Dominic on him early on, and I like Dom's takeovers have a real pop to them. But I felt it was a little short, and I felt they left a lot on the table. I think on paper these guys sound like, you know, Dominic the grappler versus Chip Day the striker, and just, we just never got it to that next level of awesomeness, and it felt a little lackluster because of that. I mean, you think if you're booking these two talents on the show, you think they'd have a pretty good, you know, really strong outing, and it just didn't happen here, in my opinion. What were your thoughts?
Very similar. I thought it was interesting hearing the commentary talk about both in the opening part, both men are going to keep it grounded, going to keep it, you know, on the mat. And I mean, he's the Kennesaw kick machine, right? He's the Atlanta's Arrow. He's about the strikes and the kicks. He's Kick Jagger. And they're talking about him like, oh, you know, you would expect him to want to grapple with, you know, the 10th best or, you know, top 5 ranked BJJ practitioner in the world. That makes no sense to me on paper. But that was the way the match was going. So that was the way that the commentary had to try to tell the story. And I think it did affect the match because, like you said, going into it, that's not what I expect. I don't see Chip Day as a mat technician wrestler. I see Chip Day as a striker. He's got some fast-paced stuff. He can hold his own in a grappling match, but he's not necessarily going to be at the level of Dominic to me. And I think that they really didn't tell that story. Then after that, they kind of do the show of respect, and then that leads into Dom firing off some really nice-looking suplexes, like you talked about. His throws and his takeovers look great, but it really felt like it was like, oh, hey, let's get through this part. Okay, now we'll shake hands, and now let's start a blood feud match. And I was kind of, you know, there was a disconnect there for me. Chip then just starts to throw some nice kicks. Then there's an out-of-nowhere snap pile driver to get the win. And like you said, I think we've talked a lot of times, especially in CWF, about matches that are done well, that save a lot, leave a lot on the table for later to continue on, to kind of stretch out storylines. But when we kind of praise that in CWF, the point is that they were able to do that while also feeling like they delivered solidly with a full-fledged match. This, I really don't think that they did. I felt like they left a lot on the table, sure, but I don't think that they did enough to make me care about what they left on the table. They did enough to really make me feel like I got something interesting to where I want to see the more. To me, it felt like they were focusing more on building to a match down the road instead of having a match right now. That said, I gave it 2.75 star. I think both guys are really good. I just think I expected a lot more out of them, and I think that they could have given us a lot more and still saved a lot for later, because they are two very talented guys who should be showing off that they have two totally different styles, who can bring two totally different interesting dynamics to the match. So yeah, that's kind of my takeaway from it.
Yeah, it's a totally disappointing. We got through these first three matches, and then we finally get one that looks like they can have some teeth to it, and they just didn't give them the time. But I will say, it seemed like the whole card, for the most part, they kept them, it almost looked like they booked too much talent on the show in a way, where they gave the top two matches a lot of time, but a lot of these other matches that looked intriguing on paper just didn't get enough time to really develop. Is that a fair case statement, you think?
That's a very fair statement, and it's one that I think needs to be talked about the booking in general. I think the idea that they had dark matches, I feel like they had too many matches. I feel like the concept of dark matches on a show like this doesn't make any sense to me, because it's just a wrestling show for the crowd. I mean, those dark matches, you say that they're not going to be on the VOD. Well, they showed up on the VOD. And the crowd that's there is going to still be there for those matches. So, I mean, realistically, that's just, it's just, I think it's too many matches. And I think that they were trying to rush through stuff because they had too many matches on the show. And I think that something like trying to have dark matches and all that is probably something that they should just drop in general and then give some of the other matches a little bit more time. So I don't think what you have to say about that is off base at all.
All right. And that leads us to John Kerman. I just can't even read my writing. Versus Tim Donst. What were your thoughts here?
I like Kerman. I've liked Kerman. He plays kind of a little bit older vet, kind of MMA-inspired wrestling gimmick. He's kind of, he's supposed to be, I guess, like he would be the guy who was doing what Dominic Guarini and Matt Riddle and everybody else was doing, but he was doing it earlier on. You know, without having like a professional MMA career to back it up, but just being a practitioner of the style. Usually I really enjoy his stuff. I thought that this match had too much comedy, too much bullshit, too much changing the tides quickly, not a lot of build back for back and forth. I think the crowd liked it. I think it was fun for a comedy match, but I don't know that these are your comedy guys. I hate to say it. I was into Tim Donst early on when he wore the headgear. I've never really gotten into Tim Donst after that point in his career on early Chikara. Since then, I've never been a fan. And I think that, I've talked about it multiple times, but when you're going to be doing what's essentially a comedy match the whole way through, I don't understand finishing it off with a spike, a double underhook, you know, pile driver in the middle of the ring. Just feels, to me, it always feels like, what was the point of even risking something like that if you're going to just be joking around the whole time before it. I give the match 2.25 star. Both guys obviously got good reactions from the crowd. Everyone was into it. It's just not a match that's necessarily for me.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's I'm with you. It felt like it was like a match that didn't know what it was trying to be. And I like liken it to a recent show on Fox. It's called The Orville, which... it's kind of a Star Trek spoof. I know you're not into those type of things, so I'm not going to ask you if you've seen it. But like even in the previews, they don't even know what to do with it. Is it a comedy? But when you watch it, it has comedic aspects through the show, but it doesn't affect the show. But then at its core, it's real Star Trek. It actually feels very Star Trek-y, where it's to the core. So it doesn't know what the hell it wants to be. Doesn't want to, like, they'll have a you know, and like it's in these store and the TV shows, there's a lot of times there's a storyline and a B storyline, and like usually the A storyline is like the Star Trek part of the show, and then the B storyline is these absurd comedy bits that they do. And I kind of felt like that was here. Like I enjoyed the mat work early on. I enjoyed the glove slapping part. But then again, I thought they took it way too far and went too long. It was funny, like, the first slap or two, right? Then they ended up with, like, 5 or 6 of the slapping of the gloves. And then we get, Kerman gets this great ankle lock on Donst, right? And we get this huge rope break spot pop. So now we're back into serious wrestling. I just, you know, it was just one of those things where... I don't even know if the crowd knew what they were trying to do. It was really off-tiltered. And I liked both the guys there. I mean, when they were playing serious wrestler, I enjoyed it. I thought the comedy missed the mark. And then, I don't know, it just kind of felt like it didn't know what the hell it was thinking of, you know? Oy, okay. But now it looks like business is about to pick up, and we're going to get to the meat and potatoes of the show. And we get the Carnies versus the Ducklings. These guys have worked each other a lot. They have good chemistry with one another. I think the Carnies come across better live than they do on tape. With that said, they still come across good on tape. So it's not like it's a I just think they come across a lot more larger than life in live settings than they do when you get the whole entrance and this and that. But here I enjoyed it. I thought the Carnies were smart heel here. By being the heels here, really helps the psychology. I enjoyed the Carnies getting the heat early on. Then we see a hot tag, and the Ducklings are running wild. Love the tandem dives by the Ducklings. And this is a knock here. It's a knock with the majority like Young Buck matches. We're down the stretch or down the hot stretch. They didn't. Teams decide to say fuck it. And same to the ref that we're not following any fucking rules. It's a tag team setting, but now everyone, there's no count of five to get out of the ring. Everybody's all in the ring doing spots. It's my least favorite thing about tag team wrestling is when you have everybody all going in and there's no consequences to it. We see it constantly with the Young Bucks. This is what it kind of felt like. This felt like the Young Bucks light in a way on the finish with all four guys in the ring. No, they didn't have to get out. There's no counting of anything. If the ref was counting, there was no consequences to it. But with that said, I still enjoyed the match. 3.25. I think it's one of those things that, you know, Meltzer would say, oh, it's the changing of the business type of stuff. But, you know, if you have those rules, they got to be enforced. I don't understand what's the point then. I mean, I don't get it. Am I being one of them old crudgingy type of people?
Listen, Pete, wrestling is just not the same business anymore. They can't lay... No, I don't disagree with you. But I do want to talk a little bit about... something like kind of I just heard about. I guess they're doing a panel at the WXW weekend. They're doing the tag league, and Walter was asked about bad habits or whatever, and he said one of the bad habits is that the Canadian Destroyer is treated like a body slam or is used like a body slam now. And yeah, when he said that, I really thought about it. I said, well, I mean, you know, the body slam was the most important move in the main event of WrestleMania 3. Yeah. So saying that even the Canadian Destroyer is used as much as a body slam now is implying that it's okay to use a body slam willy-nilly. And it's not about the moves, it's about the way they're used, right? So
yeah.
I think when you talk about the referee and the five count and all that, I think the Young Bucks for a long time did a really good job, and it's why they got the credit and the chance. They did a really good job of, by the end of the match, when everything was going hectic and out of control, you believed it because they had kind of worn out the referee at times. There was a lot of, they used to do an insane amount of ref bumps. They used to, like, bump the ref multiple times, which is kind of ridiculous, because why wouldn't the referee disqualify you, you know what I mean, when it's so obvious? But they would, you know, you could wink and nod and, oh, it was an accident, and, oh, you know, nothing, stuff that wasn't in purpose, whatever. But they would also do stuff like the amount of pin attempts, the amount of running around, the fast pace, they're all to where you could believe that the ref is so out of it from trying to keep up with this match that they've just kind of given up on trying to count stuff and do all this. Now, when you just do it and you didn't really put that effort into wearing down the referee, wearing down the structure of the match because everyone is just tired from this car crash, yeah, it does turn into like, well, you're skipping the points. And I understand why, because it is that, it's that idea that, you know, you've only seen the, you know, you've only seen, let's say, the Stones, but you don't really know where they're getting the blues ref, you know, kind of background that they're coming from. You haven't actually seen the original, you've seen the tribute. So at this point, you're like completely missing the point of how these spots are supposed to work and how this story of the match is supposed to come together. I'm not even shitting on this match in particular, but I just think that that's an issue that comes with it. I think it really comes down to understanding how to do stuff properly is the biggest part of everything. You can legitimately do anything, I think, in wrestling, and it can work. It just has to be done properly. So I think that these guys, you know, great stuff. I think one of my biggest issues with the match is that the Carnies are just too liked. The crowd just likes them enough to where I don't think that they were working heel enough. And I can't blame them for that, because obviously they are a semi-popular team in Nova. So they're not going to be able to just get pure heat. I think that if they had, it would have helped the match a little bit more.
That's an interesting take, because, you know, even in commentary, they're talking about how they, and I mean, let's put it, make sure we explain this. I mean, the lead heel faction in Nova Pro is the gated community, right?
Right.
And they even mentioned about the Carnies and the gated community don't like each other. So
yeah,
it just gives, it was almost like you're giving a I don't want to say a false message, but, you know, what are they type message, because they were clearly healing it up. It felt like though in the semi main when they were seconds.
Yeah, exactly. I just it's a little bit like the Four Horsemen of the Dungeon of Doom when the NWO showed up. It's like right. They're still technically heels, but they're also kind of against the invaders. And with the 1% being the overbearing, or the gated community being kind of the overbearing heel act, it does leave the carnies in a weird spot, because they're somewhat fan favorites in this match. Like I said, they worked heel-ish, but I think that the matches between these teams are better when the carnies are very clearly heels and the ducks are very clearly baby faces. I think that just helps the match. That said, these four men all have great, really, really great chemistry with each other, with the sizes of each four men being relatively close. I mean, the size difference between Kerry Offal, probably the biggest, and Lance Lude, the smallest, is, it's noticeable. But then when you got the other two guys in the in-between roles, really balanced out super well. With you got Nick Iggy, who's probably a little bit smaller than Rob Killjoy, it really does make the teams come across as pretty evenly matched, but still having unique styles that they bring to the match, so they don't just work the same. You got the Ducks, even with the slightly bigger second and the very small man, they're kind of flying around. Carney's using more power game with the biggest man in the match there. Really great double teams from both teams the whole way through. I gave it 3.5 stars. I liked everything about it. I think my biggest issue is just that super crazy Ducks Day device off the top cut into a cutter really feels like too much of an insane move to just be a near fall, to then have the finish be the Ducks fly together, just because, I don't know, that Ducks Fly Together move is cool, but it just doesn't, to me, come across like a finisher. But, again, it's kind of like the people's elbow, right? If it works, if the crowd gets into it, fuck it, it's a finisher. But for me, it just looks a little bit like an afterthought after such crazy stuff that had happened in the match.
Yeah, fair enough. What do you think of Curt Stallion versus Sonjay Dutt?
Really liked the opening. Sonjay Dutt working the vet, staying on the mat. Kurt's trying to get some strikes as he can. And I think that the commentary here, including Dylan, did a great job of telling that story, or I guess not telling it, but explaining the story that's being told in the ring.
Yeah, I thought this is the match where Dylan was at his best, to tell you the truth. And I think part of it is because he's so passionate about Stallion becoming a superstar and, really making a name for himself. But I think he has a passion for Stallion and really believes in him. And I think he conveyed that. And conveyed what he thinks, why Stallion's great, and without prostituting Dutt at all. I thought this by far was Dylan's best call here. That line where he mentions he might look like Kendall Windham, but he hits like Stan Hansen, I thought was just awesome. I thought Dylan was good on the whole show, but I thought here he was, by far, I thought he was at his best.
Yeah, I think that that's a great tagline for Curt Stallion. I think Dylan and me have talked about just how much I like that tagline. I agree with you. I think part of it is not just Dylan's kind of fervor for Curt Stallion, though, because I think as well, Sonjay Dutt really helped to tell a narrative as the vet of the match. He really helped to have a narrative to the match that made it really easy to tell the story on commentary. That's kind of how it works. They talk about in wrestling, they talk about wrestlers who are known, Bobby Eaton known as a night off, for being a guy that's easy to work with. I think commentary, there's a very similar thing. You got guys who are so talented at having a narrative structure to their match that it makes it easy to commentate on it because it's right there. You just got to explain what you're already pretty easily being told in ring. And I think Sonjay Dutt, underappreciated for just how good of a wrestler he is. I was actually saying it to some other people as I was watching this match. I think he did well for himself by becoming Jeff Jarrett's second and making some money doing carny stuff like Global Gold. But I think Sonjay Dutt probably could have had a bigger career if he had, given it a shot somewhere else in the big times or somewhere other places. Cause I think, super talented, has really shown kind of coming into his own as an older vet style wrestler and not just working on the high flying that he was known for. But then in the finish of this match, showing off that he could still easily do that big moonsault double stomp, which is, insanely impressive. There's very few guys who can pull that off you know, in their 20s, let alone when they're getting to Sanjay Dutt's age. So that's super, super impressive. Yeah, I thought that Kurt Stallion looking for moves that he doesn't normally do throughout the match was great. The roll through into the buck off, the modified air raid crash, I think is just a great spot that reminds me of Mark Haskins, a guy who maybe Kurt Stallion could, you know, pick up a few things from as well, just because they got a similar kind of fighting underdog style to them that I think some of his stuff could really lend itself to him. They've got that same underdog with a lot of passion and a lot of hard fighting style. So I think that, you know, that's a guy he could look to who's done that really well. And I just thought it was nice that that was kind of reminiscent of that. The headbutts from Kurt Stallion, always on point. The third one being essentially what sets up costing him the match. Third attempt on that diving headbutt I thought was great. Again, goes into Sanjay Dutt. I mean, just really taking, hey, kid, what's your best move? Hey, I know that you have this headbutt that looks really great. Let's have you overuse it. You go to the well too many times, and we finish you off based on that. I thought that's just genius for telling a story in a wrestling match. That said, I gave this 3.5 stars. I think, you know, maybe they could have used a little bit more time. Maybe they could have been featured a little bit more primarily. Maybe even if I kind of got a background build to the match a little bit more. But that said, I think both guys came out there. They were really game, and they had a really nice showing here.
Yeah, I'm with you on pretty much everything you said. I thought this was one of the better, smarter work Stallion matches where I thought he sold really well. Chicken work. His comeback felt natural and organic, as opposed to pretending to be Shibata at times. I thought this was by far his best. I don't want to say best. Let me rephrase that. One of his smarter worked matches I've seen. And I give a lot of credit for that. I thought we got some good back and forth earlier, and it's like the mat work versus the mat technician versus the striker. See Dutt in control, Stallion with the fun comebacks, and then Dutt was just, and pretty much the story was Dutt was just too much for him as the vet versus the younger guy. So it told a basic narrative, told a basic story. I think Stallion's headbutt is one of the best in the business. It's so just nasty and incredible, and you can do a lot with building, and he does a lot of neat stuff building around that, those spots, which it's hard to do nowadays, but it really works. But I thought Dutt was just fantastic on his timing and being where he needed to be in certain spots, and for putting Stallion spots where he needed to be. I thought Dutt was a real ring general here. And I give it 3 stars, and my main complaint was I just didn't think they had enough time to put it over the top to the next level. I felt if we would have gotten 5-6 more minutes, it would have been a lot better.
Well, yeah, but I mean, going off of what I was talking about with Chip and Dom, I think that they left a lot on the table when you talk about wanting to see more, but I wasn't disappointed in the match. So I think that just goes to show like the different sides of that coin.
Yeah, no, I wasn't disappointed in it, but the only thing I would say was I felt like they could have knocked it out of the park again. But yeah, I wasn't disappointed in it by any stretch of the imagination. That leads us to James Shields versus Chet Sterling and Richards. Again, this match, it just kind of felt there. It felt rushed. We got some heat on Sterling right off the bat, and then that's pretty much what the whole match was about, was getting heat on Chet. And then we go into a quick comeback, and then we get the finish. It was, I give it 2 stars. It just felt really kind of just there. What about you?
I gave it 2.25, and I probably gave the extra quarter because I liked the progressive liberal and the crowd reaction that he's getting. And I think it's just a nice dynamic having him be the foil to the 1% and everything about that. But realistically, yeah, I think the whole match was, it starts out with the double team on Daniel, and then it turns into heat on Chet. And yeah, it just felt like the whole match was the 1%, kind of working heat, working on top. But I really didn't, I didn't really get it. I mean, I obviously they got a lot of heat. The crowd really dislikes them, but I didn't feel it in the work. It felt like that was built up by just the crowd doesn't like them, but I really didn't see dastardly heel. I didn't see them being overly aggressive. I didn't really get invested in the heat from them, so it affected the match for me. I felt like, yeah, once the Liberal gets his hot tag, I felt like he was cut off too quickly to then set up the kind of bullshit finish. Yeah, so I think there just wasn't really enough here.
Yeah, what do you think of Alley Cat and Jordynne Grace?
I really enjoyed this match quite a bit. I thought that they did a great job of kind of working kind of a back and forth. Love Alley Cat playing up the shtick to start out the match. It's kind of goofy, but I think it'll work to get over. I think people get into her pretending to be a cat. But yeah, I loved the kind of the standoff spot that they have.
With Grace. And you know what? I'm sorry for interrupting, but it even. Even works both ways. She can play it heel or face. That's what it's so interesting about the gimmick.
Yeah, no, it definitely works. I like the beginning opening and the standoff as Grace dodges the big boot. I think I've talked about it before. I'm kind of over the choreographed standoffs, but when you do it like that, where the standoff is kind of punctuated with a dodge rather than they're both kind of doing big head springs into poses. Here it felt real and it felt like, oh fuck, that was close. Like something's happening here. Like the big power moves and speed back and forth. It feels like a hoss fight with two the powerful but quick athletes. It felt like a big war between the two, big throws back and forth, slams, like Grace going body slam after body slam, really milking those, as we talked earlier about the importance of the body slam and if it's overused, right? I think she made them all mean something and then caps it off with the Michinoku driver that was a big time. I could definitely see saying Allie hits the pile driver too many times. I could say in the context of the match, that pussy pile driver is not treated like a kill shot, so I can understand it. I mean, I think it was meant to really make Jordynne Grace look like a big monster, evil villain from a horror movie or something. But to me, I just took it as the pile driver being less effective than the other. So yeah, the Liger bomb to finish it off, I think, looked great. Big fan of Grace for a while now. I think she does a really good job of playing up a kind of a power women's wrestler. She's almost got the Divas of Destruction thing going on for her, and I think Alley Cat really held her own here, kind of making a name for herself now as being on that level, but not quite there. All in all, I gave it 3.25 stars. I thought both girls really worked up their characters, worked to the crowd well, while also delivering a match that you could see as like a big go-go-go. It wasn't like super rushed, but it definitely felt like a big moves match as well as having more dimension to it. So that's super impressive from a couple of younger indie female wrestlers.
Yeah, and this is just taste one of Alley Cat. I think we're going to hit her up 3 out of the 4 shows we're on. This is probably more than we've talked about Alley Cat for most of our tenure on it.
Yeah, I think we've reviewed one other match of hers. So.
Yeah, one or two. Yeah, I know. I think it was maybe one or two Inspire shows. And I think maybe Wrestle Circus. I might have covered one also. But yeah, she's definitely an Austin girl, so I know her. I've seen her around. I know the gimmick. I've seen her play face and heel. I love the gimmick. It works. She's really a smart worker. She's coming into her own. This is me guessing. I don't have no idea, but I have a strong feeling she will be in the Making Towns Classic. Would be my guess.
We'll see how. She's had 2 chances and she missed them both. I mean, this is wrestling, Pete.
I have a million feelings that she's gonna find her way in that tournament. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. And it's just the cat's a great character for the kids. Like, even if you look right when you see when she comes out, the girl dresses Wonder Woman. The little girl, she looks like she wants to pet her and like she really wants to be around her. Well, you had Sonjay Dutt, who was playing to the girl too, but it seemed like the girl was really wanted to play with Alley Cat. Well, it felt like she was more scared, not scared, but intimidated with Sonjay. You know what I'm saying? I thought it was a good hard-hitting match, nice back and forth. I thought Jordan's belly to back was absolutely nasty. Really fun stuff. I give it 2.5 stars. I thought both girls looked good. I could easily, both girls were really entertaining, and then it's great to see young up and comers look like they have a future. You know, like women's wrestling has a place to be going. Next up is we got Bo Crockett versus Innocent Isaiah, last man standing match. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, and so I've kind of, I guess, missed this feud buildup, but I was a big fan of them as a team, but I just haven't followed Nova to see that they were even feuding. But I was super excited to see this, you know, based off of what history I knew that between the two, and the crowd was definitely into it. And I thought that they did a really great job here. You got the Carnies helping Bo to start. Bo sends the Carnies away. I think that was really smart to just kind of get that out of the way early on. It did leave some interesting, like, well, are they going to return kind of spots? But it really, the way that they worked the match, that kind of didn't hang over the top of the match at all, just because the whole rest of the match, Bo was really in charge. There was no point where it felt like it would make sense for the Carnies to come back out. Bo working over Isaiah with the golf club is just kind of nasty, but feels weird with it being the 1% looming overhead, with the Carnies being kind of the underneath bad. They're not as big as them. He's working over with the golf club, so that was interesting. I thought it was Isaiah's kind of coming back, underdog, fighting from underneath, picking his spots when he can, was good. And then you show him playing with the crowd, kind of, he can't help but be flamboyant, and that ends up costing him what momentum he gets going there. I think that that's definitely a very interesting kind of dynamic to the match that you may not expect. You almost would kind of see it the other way around with the heel face dynamic, that you would expect the heel to be the one that's too busy focusing on the crowd. But here it's almost like Isaiah can't help himself. It's just his nature to be theatrical, which almost feels like coded language talking about his kind of overtly homosexual gimmick, but it plays into it. Obvious, very, very obviously that's supposed to be kind of the story of him as a wrestler. So from there, I thought Bo's attacks for the most part looked really, really vicious and brutal. There's some stuff that's just nasty. The Time of Your Life, their former tag team finisher being used as a weapon against Isaiah onto the ladder, I thought was not just apropos, but also looked just phenomenally gross. So I just thought that was great. And I think that they did an amazing job in a last man standing match, which I have picked apart over my years on this podcast and in general in wrestling as being one of the boringest stipulations for wrestling, because it's inherently built around the idea that you're going to have to stand there and wait for the ref to count for 10 seconds to finish the match. I think that the finish that they did here with Isaiah kind of working his way to his feet, getting to the point where he's there, but he doesn't have the power. I love it. It almost, you know, I love the commentators talking about the rules, and, you know, there's never been one of these matches here, so we don't have necessarily the rules exactly. I love the idea. It almost feels like the kind of like the completion rule in football. It's like, well, yes, he was technically kind of on his feet, but he was not able to establish kind of control or having kind of his feet planted for even a second, so you can't consider that as a break of the count, as he flops directly face first just in time for the referee to count that 10 and the match to be over. I thought that was, again, as I said, a dynamic and suspenseful way to end a match like this, after Isaiah really sold his ass off to put this match over the top and make it really, really enjoyable. With all that said, I gave it 3.25 star. I probably would have appreciated the match more if I had gotten the kind of pre-match build more, and I had been invested in the drama more. I bet I would have been even higher on that. Bo Crockett with the post-match pile drivers on the chairs are gross. Dylan talking it up, I thought, was great, as he's talking about how disgusting Bo is. This one thing about a match is another thing about this. You need to get him ejected from the building. I thought that was done really well, in a way where it didn't sound like hyperbole. I think Dylan sounded legit. He really believed it. It made sense in the kind of the ramifications of the storyline and the actions that happened. And it's just that those are the moments, instead of trying to do, you know, the dreaded X of death and do a stretcher job at the end of every match and try to make everyone believe it's a work shoot injury. I think that this kind of in the context really made it believable. He was not over the top, but super believable, and just how disgusted he was of the whole thing. And I just thought, as a total package, moving Bo Crockett forward, a guy that I saw as really the second in this act, every time I saw them as a tag team, I thought of Isaiah as the star and Bo Crockett as the second. I think coming out of this, he definitely needed to win the feud. So I think that that was a smart move, and I think that this could definitely propel him up the chain of the ladder, up the food chain a little bit as a possible star going forward.
I'm going to abstain from reviewing the match. I watched it. I feel I don't do it justice because I don't know the whole backstory, and I feel this is a match that I think the backstory enhances it. There's a lot of stuff I liked, and there's some stuff I didn't like. But I feel it's not fair of me to really review it without knowing the whole backstory, so I'm going to pass on it because it's a seriously grudge feud. Next match, we got Angelus and Lane versus Mia Yim. Both girls I like. I really like Mia Yim a lot. I think she's really grown as a worker in the last year or so. We see Lane with like the Pearl Harbor to start, which I enjoy. And I like that spot, especially if they don't do it every match. And here it was protected, so it got over because she did it. And I thought Angelus Lane, will again, worked the crowd real well. But they're kind of in a dead slot, and they didn't get nearly enough time to give me a convincing story, a star in 3/4. What were your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, this was kind of angle alert. I think that they did a pretty good job of trying to hide it from the opening, but I think that that ends up being a detriment as they went just a little bit too short to be satisfying and just a little bit too long to be very obviously just an angle. I think that they got to the point where I was starting to seriously kind of get into a match, and then they cut it off, which I think really affected it. Agree with you 100%. I think from the time that I was first kind of exposed to Mia Yim and complaining that I thought that she was technically fine but had terrible strikes, she has become easily one of the best women's wrestlers, easily probably in the top. I would say she could probably make her way into my top 100 for 2017. Really, really good. Angelus Lane playing the loose cannon, almost invader character in Nova is good, especially when you have the main, we talk about the main heels being the 1%, them being a lot more clean cut, a lot more come through the front door and just tell you that they're better than you and not really have to try to take underhanded or sneaky tactics. I think it's good to have Angelus Lane playing that character. She's that loose cannon. She shows up when she feels like it, throws fireballs, attacks people from behind. So I think that really works and makes her kind of the strong second. I think she's definitely supposed to be probably the number two heel of the company. I think they've done a pretty good job of building that up. That said, this was the start of a good match that then got cut off by music. I hate to say it because, you know, it can work, but that trope of having a music distraction lead exactly to the end has become so WWE that it really ruins any enjoyment of it being used anywhere else, just because it's been so overdone there.
And it makes whoever falls for it look stupid too.
It really ruins the credibility of the person who falls for it. So I gave it 2.5 stars. I think it should have been, if you're going to do this kind of bullshit or kind of angle thing for the finish, they probably should have just cut this match off a lot quicker.
Yeah. What do you think of the main event, man? Eric Royal, Logan Easton, LaRue.
This was, definitely something. I think Dylan giving this match of the year contender level praise, I think, is not unwarranted, but I don't necessarily see it quite there. Gave it 4 stars. Loved the action. Loved the character work. Eric Royal definitely super over as a babyface, but I do think that I like him more as a heel. But still really good here. Love Logan even before the match, taking the time to tell the fans, I don't suck. I'm better than you. I don't suck. Just think that that's really good. I liked, Eric's power, like his power moves. Loved kind of Eric Royal holding Logan up on his shoulders and commentary taking the time to put that over as Eric kind of maintaining control of him so that he can't take a powder and cut off his momentum. I thought that was done really well. But then it's stuff like, you know, Eric Royal's beating him from pillar to post and throwing him all around the building, only for the second that he throws him back in the ring, Logan comes back with an elbow suicida, you know, taking him out on the ground. Like, little stuff like that, just kind of, I think that could have could have been, I guess, taken a little bit more time. It just felt like Logan was back up too fast there. The count out, I like that after Royal was blocking the count outs over and over again, Logan is now willing to just take the count out. And then after kind of the brawling around the building, then they get into the ring and it feels like they go for a lot of just like big false finishes back and forth. The crowd loves it. They get super into it the whole time. But it felt a little bit like they could have had like a, I don't know, just a more build, more kind of not just going into, you know, finisher spam. And I hate to even say that because I did enjoy the match, but it did kind of feel that way. The crowd being kind of 50-50 split between the Logan and Eric was really interesting, with the 1% trying to be such the worst heels. It seems that, you know, there is a gated community section of the crowd. There is a lot of fans that are starting to really respect Logan because he's a really, really fun worker. He's really good at his character stuff and he's pretty good in the ring. So definitely kind of interesting. But yeah, then, you know, as you break it down, everything Eric Royal does looks fucking great. He's got amazing offense, amazing strikes, super fast. Love the counters on the you know, the counter of the Space Jam into the cutter. I thought that looked so good. And that's when I'm just like, this match is going over the top, just too much, too much. Eric keeps setting up for the pounce. He gets cut off a couple times. Eventually does hit one, but it sends Logan all the way to the floor. That's, you know, fucking nuts from that. Moonsault miss, I think I liked that as it almost even played into the 50-50-ness of the crowd. It seemed like Logan was, you know, throwing it off his game by the crowd getting behind him. He even so much so that he goes up top. He calls for it and even goes up top for a big moonsault, kind of doing some flashy high flying that the crowd would get into. And that kind of ends up setting up the finish there. So I kind of like that maybe the crowd's adulation actually kind of cost him because he enjoyed it, even though he says he's better than them and he doesn't care about all the people. For a moment there, he was sidetracked by how much he liked the people chanting for him. So I thought that was kind of an interesting detail that maybe could have been pulled out and talked about a little bit by the commentary. But it was tough because at that moment, it ended up being a lot of hot action to lead into the finish with Eric Royal getting the definitive win with the submission hold with the Gorilla Clutch. So definitely big time fun. With all that said, I gave it 4 stars. Loved the work, love everything about it, but I don't know if I have it at the match of the year contender level for me personally.
Yeah, it didn't reach it for me either, for a couple of reasons. I had it at the 3 3/4, the 4-star range. I'm like back and forth on it. I just can't, you know, either way, I mean, it's in that range. I love LaRue, like you said, mentioned, I loved him getting the heat right off the bat, saying I'm better than you, blah, blah, blah. Really good. Then Royal starts dominating early and physically knocking him around. At this point, I thought he should have taken like a powder and worked the crowd some. It felt awkward that he didn't, because he took this big bump in the ring and just kind of just like posed on the ground as opposed to, I think he should have gone and got a powder instead. And then got some heat that way. But you know, that's just a choice. It's easy to say that in hindsight. Then we see Royal with the arm work, which I thought was menacing and had purpose. I love Royal's hammer lock into it. I love that. And then Logan takes a powder off that, which I thought was good. Royal smashing LaRue's face was great. Love Logan focusing on the neck, like Royal using his size, and then LaRue again, just his whole character work of healing it up was fantastic. I loved how Logan rolled out of the ring after the football tackle. I thought that was a great momentum shifter. Like, hey, get out of the ring. He's building momentum on me. I thought that was a fantastic ring general decision. I loved Logan becoming a human bowling ball throughout the sections of the crowd was great. I was not a fan after Logan took all that ass kicking that he finally gets back in the ring and then hits a bullet tope. I thought he should have been selling the ass kicking, because I mean, bottom line is, even on commentary, Dylan was mentioning how Royal is really punishing Logan by, you know, tossing him, and then he gets back in the ring and hits a bullet tope. I didn't think that was earned. I didn't think he built to that very well. But overall, man, really good stuff. Logan Easton LaRue, you could look at his chest, it was just bruised and battered. Royal, super charismatic. And yeah, I'm with you. I like him better as a heel, but he was fantastic here as a walking tall babyface. I thought at times Logan took control a little too much, seeing that Royal was much bigger than him. And I enjoyed Logan Easton LaRue working the neck. But again, I'm one of those guys who, I mean, it doesn't always have to happen, don't get me wrong, but I enjoy seeing the smaller guy chop down that tree. And it always feels like he should be working Royal's legs as opposed to the neck. But overall, really good stuff. 3 3/4, the 4-star match. And it got off to a rough start. And I don't know. I don't know if we should count the first two matches, since they technically shouldn't. They just aired for shits and grins. But I'd give it a thumbs up just because the main event was really strong and there was a good enough wrestling up and down and different aspects of it. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up. Not a gigantic endorsement, but a good solid thumbs up. What about you?
Yeah, I would definitely give it a thumbs up. I think that there's a point probably after intermission where everything is good to great, and that's where kind of the show is the most, you know, the best part of it, and then the rest of it, unfortunately, being like a pre-show or build up or whatever, is none of it is terrible, but none of it is really super good. So yeah, I like, there's stuff that I like, so I definitely give it a thumbs up.
Yeah. So there we go. That's Nova Project, Nova Pro, and the Nova Project 3 Powerbomb TV. On that note, man, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're back with CWF Worldwide. And this is the not a normal CWF. This is more about the the RLG?
Yeah, the Rising Generation League.
Yeah, RGL, I'm sorry. It was all about pretty much, you know, a lot of fresh talent mixed in with some CWF Mid-Atlantic regulars. And then it was kind of an interesting episode. Nothing storyline got, you know, advanced really. But it was cool to get some fresh takes on some stuff and some interesting stuff. We open up with Ethan Sharp versus Bellamy Koja. I loved Koja's arm drag real early on, and I thought Sharp took a great bump off it. I thought I love Sharp's capitalization on Koga's miss to set up his finish. I thought it was a good storyline match, and I thought Koga looked really good, like a real good potential prospect. What were your thoughts here, and what are your thoughts on Koga as a prospect?
Yeah, I thought Sharp looked good in the opening, kind of taking control of Koga, but Koga comes back, and I liked Koga's big strikes. I thought that he had a lot of really good-looking stuff there. Enjoyed him missing the King Kong knee drop to set up the uppercut for the finish. I thought that was good as well, kind of showing the... showing that, you know, his striking game ended up getting one-upped by Ethan's big uppercut, so I liked that. I think Bellamy Koga definitely is a prospect here who I'd like to see more of, and I think, again, we've talked over and over again, Sharp is getting built up to being seen as legitimate, and I think he's actually done a really good job of building with it and being believable, so definitely really enjoyed that out of him.
Totally agree. And then we got a Faye Jackson promo, you know, kind of talking, you know, kind of like what she did on Nova Pro, talking about Cookie with her shake or whatever the hell it is. You know, it was fine. What you get out of it?
Yeah, this is what I was talking about. I mean, her personality very obviously comes through big. I think the crowds definitely get into her. And this is kind of, I'm not going to say she shouldn't be a wrestler, but as of right now, this is obviously where her bread is kind of buttered, is her personality. So she's definitely very good at working that up. She just has to focus on that in-ring and step it up a little bit.
Yeah, and then we get Kane Justice versus Thomas Munoz from Texas. What do you think of this?
I liked this quite a bit. I don't know what if you're familiar with the Munoz at all.
I am not, actually.
Yeah, I would assume you're not. But I mean, Kane. It's so funny because Kane was on Johnny's CWF Spotlight show just the other day, and he was talking about how everyone talks about him and his good matches and all this, but they don't talk about matches like this, where he's carrying guys, where he's carrying rookies. And he was saying it, it's almost hard to tell with Kane in that setting if he was partially in kayfabe or not, and that almost makes it even better to tell, like, this guy is, he's almost a little bit Kane Justice in the real world as much as he is on the show. But I thought he did a great job here working as kind of squashing the rookie character in his setting rather than you know, working with someone who's, you know, a veteran over him. I thought that he did a great job. I thought Munoz did a good job selling his arm while also being believable with his comebacks. I think it set up the finish super well, how great that Munoz did selling his arm. And it also helped that he was, you know, a little bit bigger, so that he was a little bit believable in his comebacks, that he had a chance. I thought they did, like, a really, really good job of kind of showcasing Kane, and Kane did an awesome job of not making the guy look like shit, even though he kind of squashed him in the end. So, yeah, I thought it was really impressive for rookie Kane Justice having this match against a younger opponent, or I guess a less experienced, because I don't necessarily know his age, opponent.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was a really good solid showcase for Kane, and showed some of his ring general's status of becoming a ring general. Yeah, I mean, again, it was good, solid stuff. I felt it lacked a little of a spark a little bit, but I wouldn't call it a bad match or anything, but I thought it was a good showcase to get Kane over some more and show this guy that he's able to go for a while with the Rising Generation League champion. And so, I mean, it was kind of like it was worked in a way to help elevate this guy, too. So, I mean, in that sense, it worked, but I just felt it just lacked a spark or something. Then we get Wilkins and Royal with the coach, and you know, they're talking smack, and they bring out Alley Cat, their opponent, and at least it's a six man with Alley Cat and Adler and Snooty Fox versus Eric Royal, Wilkins, and Lee, not Trevor Lee. Which Lee is it?
Ace Lee with an I.
Yeah, okay. There we go. What were your thoughts on this match?
Which Ace Lee, I think, is actually Kabuki Knee, right?
That's who I'm thinking it is. Because they said it wasn't.
They were saying, this is a whole new person over and over again, so much that you knew it had to be him. So The match itself, I thought it was funny when Alley Cat said she brought some friends, and then the first one out is Snooty Fox, so I was hoping that the next person out would be another animal, so it would be like an Animal Kingdom thing, but unfortunately it was not, but it was the surprise returning Jesse Adler, which I didn't know that he came back, which is cool, because, you know, he had supposedly retired, or maybe it was an injury thing, you never know with CWF what's going on, but... Yeah, I thought that Royal picking on Adler was good to start, especially he's just, you know, returned and he's not even getting out of the gate with a chance to even show off as he's just getting beat up by Royal. I thought it was good to put some heat on him. I liked it kind of breaking down, and, you know, the coach is even kind of trying to get involved as everything is kind of falling apart there. But yeah, I thought that this was fun, but it wasn't necessarily to the level of what we expect from the CWF big multi-man matches, the big trios match like this. I think it was a lot more lighthearted. I really didn't think that Snooty got the showcase that he deserves right now based on the push and the kind of level of moving forward that you're expecting out of him. I thought Wilkins was like weirdly MIA for the match, but when he did get in there, I thought he sold well to help kind of put over the Young Stars team, but he didn't really feel like he did a bunch in the match. I think Eric Royal was probably the star of this match. Eric Royal, or maybe you could say Alley Cat, but I think
Royal's shit talking was tremendous.
Yeah, I would definitely say I think it's pretty easily that Eric Royal was the star of the match. The personality's over the top, obviously. You talk about that shit-talking and just playing around. The guy is...
ain't no cat.
He's so comfortable in there, and he's so comfortable in his skin that you just believe everything that he says is real. But it's also larger than life. So, you know, it's such a great mix that he's got there with that dynamic. He feels like a real guy, but he also feels like a real guy that you want to lean in and pay attention to. So that's a really, really important mix, especially in small room wrestling that he does here at CWF. But yeah, like I said, fun action. Alley Cat gets the win. You know, hopefully they're going to be using her some more moving forward. It's really interesting that her first match is this mixed gender, and that might be what they're going for is intergender wrestling for her going forward, and I'm not necessarily against it, but we'll see how it goes for her coming out of this.
Yeah, for me, my biggest takeaway was actually watching how they played the "this is a total Southern finish," you know, with Coach getting stripped down to his Hello Kitty underwear and him bumping around. I thought he did a good job carrying the finish. I just wanted to see how Alley Cat and actually, because I mean, yeah, she's from Texas, but I mean, they don't do it's not territories anymore where they're doing Southern style wrestling anymore. So I wanted to see how she reacted to, you know, how she's been more around the Joey Ryan Dickathon stuff versus a Southern finish, ha ha ha, laugh at the coach, the manager type of thing. And I thought she could have handled it a little bit better. I don't think she did poorly or anything, but I thought it was a fun finish, and it's one of those finishes that you can do because it's been done forever. I mean, J.J. Dillon, they used to strip him down, and he'd be this is Florida J.J., not J.J. with the horseman, because they're different characters. This is more of J.J. in Florida, where he'd Dusty would strip him down, and he'd be wearing garter belts type of stuff. He'd go on television and do promos saying he had him on because they made his legs feel good and all this stuff. There's a thing you can do. It's a comedy where it's not hurting anybody because you're making fun of the heel character. So, I thought Coach played it up pretty good and bumped really well for him and stuff. But you know, anyway, this was an interesting episode. Of course, I mean, I don't want to compare it to some of the other CWFs because it's not really fair, but I enjoyed what they gave us, and it's cool to give us like a little different of a taste here and there. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And actually, as you talked about that, I thought, is that something that's really missing from the psyche of modern wrestling fandom and wrestlers? Is because WWE has been so out of the game of having heel managers for so long that they forget like what they're supposed to be there to do. Like, you talk about it, but the whole point is this match, I mean, literally the coach showed his ass and it got that kind of cathartic, the heel or the baby faces get their comeuppance or get their what they deserve, but it doesn't really hurt any of the wrestlers because he's the heel manager.
Exactly.
And he's supposed to be zany, and he comes up, and it's just like that was kind of the point. They took the heat, and they also kind of built up the heat, and they were protected because they're just managers; they're not wrestlers. So, yeah, it's just it's weird. It's funny to think about that. So many wrestlers get devalued because they don't have the manager to take these moments, and it really does help. Like, if Eric Royal had gotten stripped down to his underwear, it might have affected his heat moving forward. So instead, his manager does it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? The coach is going to get his heat back because they're going to put, you know, I'm sure you've read the spoilers, right?
No, I haven't. I try to stay away from it.
Okay, then I won't say it.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to this angle that played out on over at North Carolina at the where they shot the vignettes for Snooty, and they did a super heated angle. Let me put it this way, that I'm dying to see how it plays out on television.
Well, yeah, exactly. So that said, liked the episode. I agree with you. This was kind of a diversion episode. It's Rising Generation League, so it doesn't necessarily count, and it's not fair to hold it to the same level as the other shows, but still a lot of fun. And if you're like a hardcore, if you're a hardcore wrestling fan, hardcore CWF fan, watch it. If you're one of these people who maybe doesn't have complete the time, I'll just say this is a skippable episode, but there's still fun stuff to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely things to take out from it, especially if you're a connoisseur or a guy who wants to see even just little things like how to book, how a manager can still have fun in wrestling in 2017. I remember, folks, again, CWF Rumble next Saturday, live at the Sportatorium, CW Fan Fest corresponding it with that weekend, CWF FanCon corresponding it with that weekend on October 14th and 15th. It's going to be awesome. We're going to have there's going to be a ton of Q&As and interviews with the talent and the brains behind the company. There's going to be a catered meal there. We'll be watching watching some CWF on the big Jumbotron. A lot of interesting people to talk to. A lot of people who've been around the business, who've been on the outskirts of the business. So a lot of neat stuff. A lot of cool people are gonna be there. So man, if you're on the bubble about coming out, man, I'm telling you, you'll have fun. If you like to drink alcohol, you'll have fun. If you don't like to drink alcohol, you'll still have fun. It's a thing for everybody. It's FanCon. CWF first fan con. Let's come out, support a great company that deserves it, and support and then be on the ground floor in. And we'll be talking about this 20 years from now, how you're at the first CWF fan con at the Rumble, where Trevor freaking Lee defends his title in the Rumble, going in number one. He's got to be. And he's going to be putting his title on the line in the Rumble. This is going to be one of them. You talk about this like Ric Flair 1992 years ago, going in and surviving the Rumble and becoming champion. This could be up there in one of those type of great memories that you could tell your grandkids and stuff. So be there and have fun. And if you have any questions, follow at John Philip Habage on Twitter, at JB Bryant 025. 025 on Twitter, and I can't remember the FanCon one, but I mean, if you search CWF FanCon, you'll find it on Twitter. I have all the information, all the stuff to sign up. It's gonna be a blast. Be there, be square.
At FanCon CWF.
There you go. Bing, bing, bam, boom. I'll be doing stuff not live, but I'll be recording stuff, sending them to Tim. And if you can't be there, you can still be interactive with us by we will be uploading it as quick as I can get it to Tim, as quick as Tim can edit some stuff together and get it up on the site. So I hope we will have stuff going on online at Place to Be Nation at Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation as CWF FanCon is going on. So we can have like a, you can, even if you're not there, you can still join us and have fun by kind of being like the fly on the wall type of thing. So with that said, why don't we take a break? No, let's go suck some NXT. And we open up with Ruby Riott versus the Mean Girls. This angle is so weird. I love the moment on the tag, you know, I mean, it's great, but the angle really makes zero sense. And that is why in the history of wrestling, when you have two people who were enemies and now they're teaming up, why they always did it via vignettes or promos or angles backstage. It never happened like during matches. You'd see Ric Flair coming out in Florida to ask Dusty and Blackjack Mulligan to be his partner, and you'd do these vignettes of him sloshing through the ranch and stepping in cow shit to ask Dusty to be his partner, or Jerry Lawler would do vignettes and interviews and promos in Memphis, either asking Austin Idol or Bill Dundee or Bam Bam Bigelow. He needs a partner to face whoever it might be, the Road Warriors. And they would always build this up, they never did it while working. They did it behind the scenes and made you buy into it more than this. This just seems really awkward to me. Because we already had Regal say you can't do handicap matches, but every match starts out as a handicap match. So they're trying to tell the story in the ring, where maybe it's because they're not these people. Maybe Ruby and Riott is not that great of a promo, and or they don't feel her, and Nikki Cross can carry it verbally, so they need to do it in ring, or they don't want to talk as much. But yeah, I think the whole angle's falling flat because they're doing it I don't want to say the wrong way, but they're doing it a way that traditionally hasn't worked in wrestling.
I'm watching it and I'm really questioning what's Ruby Cross's in game more than I'm like excited for anything to come out of this. And yeah, and on top of that, just talking about how it affects the angle and the credibility of Regal after saying that you can't have handicap matches, they keep doing them. And it's kind of killing the iconic. I mean, they're just getting beat over and over again by this team that doesn't even really work together. So yeah, it's just not.
Which is funny about the team iconic, and I don't like them, okay? But I've said plenty of times I like him in vignettes and stuff, or behind the scenes. They'll get their heat back by being obnoxious mean girls in vignettes or in backstage skits or whatever. They're a group that you can beat them to death, and it's really not going to hurt them. I will say that, though.
Yeah, and that's probably definitely true, but it's still, why risk it? Why beat them so many times for nothing?
No, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I mean, because I don't understand why we're doing a repeat, a rinse and repeat again. Already. Then we get a Lars Sullivan interview. I thought this was pretty solid. What about you?
Yeah, I've heard some people being really negative about this because he shouldn't be talking. I mean, obviously the number one person is Brian Alvarez, who doesn't understand how wrestling works in 2017. But, like, the idea that he shouldn't be talking because he's this monster, I'm like, it's fine. He did pretty good. If he sounds fine and it works for me. I'm not going to complain.
To me, they've already, you know what, Alvarez, they've already made the decision to have him talk even before this interview. So now you're bitching about something that's already happened. Having him now come back to becoming this quiet monster makes zero sense. We've seen him argue with Regal about partners and this and that. Zero. Alvarez sucks.
He turned around at Alvarez. I guess he didn't understand that they brought up Dominic Guarini on a different show. And I guess he didn't understand that when Tom Lawler was referring to him as the Boner Collector, he was making a joke on his real nickname, the Bone Collector. Right. So when they said Dom Guarini and it was on the live radio, he said, you can't call him that, or you can't call him by his nickname on the show. And he called him just the Collector. And I'm like, oh, he doesn't realize that boner collector was a fucking joke. It just goes to show how checked out this guy is on wrestling in general. So, yeah, it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to take his points seriously.
Yeah, Alvarez is a guy who dumb-lucked himself by getting connected to Meltzer. Now he doesn't even write his own damn Figure Four newsletter. All he does is do audio. I mean, there's so many other people who actually watch wrestling and can do audio with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. Honestly, probably one of the 10 luckiest men on the planet.
Yes, this is definitely true.
I mean, easily one of the most replaceable people on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, anyone could do what he's doing, honestly. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's just terrible. All right. Then we got a Zelina Vega promo interview, walking. She's good. She's good. I like her.
Yeah.
What'd you make of it?
Great promo. Carries herself well. Comes across legit. Speaks well. Everything. Fantastic. And I think she definitely has a good amount of upside. And I think that she's also probably got politically, or not even necessarily politically, but I think there's some backstage movements and stuff that involve her maybe boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, whatever, that bode well for her, because I could just see WWE being really into pushing her hard, because just to kind of stick it to Austin Aries for leaving, they're going to push his girlfriend really hard. So I could definitely see that working out really well for her in general.
Yeah, and they'll probably end up pairing her and pair her with a man where they end up being a real life couple, and then they become a real life couple, because that's how wrestling couples work.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're really not that good of actors. Then we get this Lio Rush with Aleister Black. Everyone's super excited for the Lio Rush debut, and Velveteen Dream attacks Lio Rush, and we get the feud that I don't give a shit about. What about you?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of great. I mean, I'm sorry. People want to complain, but I think it's actually kind of great that Lio Rush gets just attacked and laid out by Patrick Clark. And then if you know the background, you know that those guys are actually close, trained together and stuff like that. So, that's definitely a lot of fun there as well. And, I mean, Lio Rush will be fine. He got jumped, guys. He'll make it out of this okay. And if he doesn't bounce back from this, then guess what? He doesn't deserve to do well in WWE, because he can't get over. And I'm going to tell you something. The booking on the main roster is going to be way worse than getting jumped by a guy that's about twice your size. If he can't make it over this, then he's going to have a lot worse problems. Yeah,
he's earmarked for 205 Live. So
oh, yeah.
Watch out.
And then, yeah, turn around and go back to the feud that I don't care about. And I was talking to someone, and this is maybe a weird diatribe to take, but there's something about the idea that Black won't recognize him that feels like it has weird racial undertones that I don't like. So I'm hoping that that doesn't play into this in any way, because it is kind of weird to show this, like, you know, super pale, like, European guy who won't even acknowledge the existence of a Black man. It just kind of, it could be frustrating in some ways.
Yeah, for sure. Then we got Kairi Sane versus Aaliyah. I'll say, man, that girl is over like Grover. Man, I mean, like, superstar reaction, $1 million over, and you know what, man, gosh, it's refreshing to see somebody that over, without having had hardly anything to do so far. I think that's really cool. What'd you make of the match and seeing Kairi over with, I mean, I know she has a huge following online. I'm not a big connoisseur of female wrestling, so shame on me. But what's this pirate gimmick thing? This thing's looking weird.
So I guess she was a college level yachts person.
Okay.
And so then that played into her becoming a pirate character. Cause she likes to boat.
And she does that character from Japan though, right?
Yeah, she did the same character in Japan. It was definitely difficult for JR to understand, I guess, during the Mae Young Classic. He didn't get that she was a pirate. People made a big deal about that. When I ended up watching it, and people made a big deal about Lita having to tell him, she's a pirate, JR, like, to shut up about saying that she's a boats person or whatever. You could just tell that JR was kind of needling her. And, like, he was pushing the boatsman thing and the yachtsman thing, like, as he was trying to get Lita to eventually say she's a pirate. So people who were taking it as he didn't have any clue that she was a pirate, like, were completely obviously missing that that's just JR's sense of humor.
They got worked as well. I haven't seen it, so but he ended up working the crowd and Lita there.
Yes, he pretty much was able to work everybody into thinking that he was, like, oblivious when it was very obvious, and he was just trying to get her to say it out loud, finally, and she finally did.
So you're telling me when the all-time behind-the-scenes political guys who was able to survive Bill Watts, Jim Crockett regime, Vince McMahon for freaking 20 plus years was able to outwork the internet.
And Lita. Shocker, right?
Who fell for Edge.
Yes. Yeah. No, I know. It's amazing. So, yeah. That's her whole thing. You are so right. She's over as fuck. Over AF, as they say.
Yeah.
And she is essentially what Nakamura thinks he is. That she could get away with doing absolutely nothing and everyone will still love her. But she does not. She brings it here in this match. She looks good against Aaliyah, or I think that's what they're calling her now. And I thought Aaliyah looked all right when she was in control, but this was like mostly a squash match.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Then we get the main event. Drew McIntyre, Roddy Strong. What were your thoughts here?
These are the guys I think these are the guys that, like, the Fight Forever chant should really be happening for. They have amazing chemistry, amazing matches. All of their matches feel like wars by the end of them. I mean, it doesn't really matter what they do in the match. It just, like, they sell it like it's this huge drama filled back and forth. It's amazing the way Roddy can feel so big, but also being so fast. You know, he's like he works the, like, kind of hummingbird pecking at him, but he also comes across super believable being strong and powerful and striking back and forth with Drew the whole time. Drew being able to barely keep up, but when he can get him, he really just smashes the shit out of him. So much fun. The guy's just stiff, strikes, throws back and forth. Roddy going after that back over and over again with those big backbreakers, and I mean, he has really made this work. He's taken Roddy Strong, ROH, Noah Guy, and he's taken that style and brought it to the NXT, to the WWE fans, and created something that even they can super buy into. I just thought this is where Drew McIntyre gets over. I'm sorry, we talked last week about his promos. They're not the best part of his game, but in ring, he just has something there. I thought the finish was really interesting. Roddy goes for the dive off of the apron after he was really kind of got complete rolling, full head of steam. He's completely in control, gets caught, powerbombed into the post, future drop DDT, Claymore, really just effective, really definitive win for Drew McIntyre. These guys are just so goddamn good together. I love their work. Everything looks snug. Everything looks believable. Not a lot of psychology story-wise, like, oh, I'm going after this. I mean, Roddy's focusing on that back, but Drew is really just playing the big gargantuan monster who is going to take what he can get, and he's going to make it hurt when he does get a chance to get his hands on Roddy, while Roddy is having to be a lot more kind of particular in his strikes and his attacks. He's got to have a lot more kind of nuance to his game to be able to stand toe-to-toe with Drew, and I think it really puts over the strengths that both guys have.
Yeah, I didn't like it as much as their other matches, but I gave it, like, still gave it 3 3/4. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was structured a lot like a Roman Reigns match, where Drew is obviously Roman Reigns, where he sold most of the match or sold a lot of the match, and you know, you get some hope spots here and there, and then you cut off and sell some more. And I felt the thing was about where the match helps both guys, where Roddy still looks strong as an ass kicker and almost wins, but you know, ultimately Drew's too much for him, and he can't handle the mass that is Drew McIntyre, and McIntyre is able to finish him off with his finisher. I thought it was like, and you know, and I thought it was one of them things where it was like Drew was Roman trying to make his guy look really well good, and that's what we got here. And then Undisputed comes out, and you know, they're just teasing some stuff. What do you thought? What did you think about this?
I think it feels a little too obvious. as to that he's going to join up with them. I think there's no way that Roddy actually joins up with Undisputed, but it's still, it's definitely an interesting storyline. And as I talk about Nikki Cross, I have no clue what she's going for, or where the storyline's going. I think that this has a good, like, there's room for anything to happen, but I mean, I think it's very obviously what's happening, which I think makes it a lot more enjoyable.
And then coming out of the spoilers that came out of the tapings is War Games is going to be at the next NXT Live special. And you have Undisputed, you have Sanity, and you have Authors of Pain and Roddy Strong as a team. I'm not a big concept of the 3-on-3-on-3 thing. I'd rather do the 5-on-5 thing, which is how I did it. I mean, it could work, don't get me wrong. But it does kind of scream like big, heavy-hearted Roddy Strong heel turn at the end here, doesn't it?
I mean, yes and no. I mean,
they could be teasing it. I understand that, but it feels like that's what you're expecting going in here.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
I mean, if they're turning him, they're going to turn him here. I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's live, and it's a perfect setting for the horseman beatdown, as they say, right? He turns on his team. He's got the Authors of Pain as his team, though. It just doesn't seem like a team that can get turned on unless they really want to have them be full babyface. But even then, I think it takes more than Undisputed plus Roddy to beat up the Authors of Pain, honestly. Those guys are...
And then even if you think about it, and there's still the numbers, there's 9 people. It still sounds like you still have 5 people. I mean, it's 3-on-3-on-3. That's 9. Even if he turns, the numbers game doesn't help him. They're 4 versus 5.
Right. Well, I mean, that's to say if you get Sanity and the Authors of Pain working together, right? Which you would assume that they would, but...
Would if someone turns on them.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. But, I mean, does that make sense? Or do they go another way with it? And maybe, you know, weirdly, the Authors of Pain join up with Undisputed or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, where does... What makes sense? Does it make sense? Why are they doing it as a three-way? I don't think there's ever been a three-way War Games that was good, so that's also an issue with the situation. So we'll see. I mean, I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm excited to see the build to it. Maybe they can make it all make sense, but as of right now, I'm a bit trepidatious on the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm a little worried, but man, it's War Games, so I'm all in. On that note, let's take a break. We'll be back with some Inspire Pro.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. back and we're going to review the Inspire Pro show that was up on YouTube. And it opens up with Andy Dalton versus Gary J in a ladder match in the finals of a tournament they're running where the winner gets free reign in Inspire Pro. I'm a fan of both these guys. Neither one of these guys work in a bubble. They always engage in the crowd or they're doing a spot that engages the crowd. This was a hard-hitting match. Both guys are trying to beat the crap out of each other so much that you can't climb up on the ladder. I like this. Like I complained when we watched that ladder match in progress a while back about how they were doing that stupid slow ass climb the ladder trope. Here we weren't getting that because these guys were just beating the crap out of each other with ladders. I like that, using the ladder as a weapon, you making this personal. Dalton's powerbomb onto the ladder was nasty. Both guys sold the big moves and the big hits. Dalton gets his nasty cut. Really strong match. I give it 3 3/4. Really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed everything about it. They worked hard. And they even left more on. They even left some on there where you could even want a rematch. I mean, I really enjoyed these guys in the ring together. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, as you talk about, they did a good job of making this match about the gimmick, about the ladders, but also they stuck with their style. They're both kind of work strike heavy, kind of hossy fight style, especially interesting with Gary J being so much slimmer than Andy Dalton here, but it still works. They really come across similarly tough and really brutal with their use of the ladders against each other, with their kind of just their fighting style in general. I loved having the short ladder. The step ladder can be, you know, seen as goofy or a joke, but it was not used as a joke. It was really used as like a nice way to keep the ladder involved as a weapon, but having it sized down and really being 100% just a weapon, which I thought that was actually really smart. And a lot of people could see that as a stupid throwaway comedy thing, but I think they actually made that an important part of the match. Which was done really, really well. And as I said, it plays to the gimmick rather than just using a steel chair because, hey, that works for us to have a weapon in the match. It's like, hey, this is a ladder match, so why don't we use a ladder even if it's tiny? Loved that. The blood from Andy Dalton seemed hard way on the back of the head there, just gushing blood out of his head by the end. Gets the big win. I think Andy Dalton can definitely do something cool with this, but I did say from the start of the tournament that I thought that Davidson was the guy for this, but I'm excited to see what Dalton does with it as well, because he's definitely a guy that I'm super into. The crowd was into it. It was a good way to open up the show. I think if you wanted to have a hot match to open it up and then get some post-match shenanigans with the new movement and a really good fired up promo from Andy saying he's going after them, and I gave the whole thing 3 1/4 star, and I thought like I said, good way to open up the show.
Yeah, I agree. I like Dalton's promo too, and new movement injuring him. It just prolongs the story. Good stuff. Then we get the six person tag. What were your thoughts here?
I thought that this was a little sloppy, a little kind of who knows what the fuck is going on. I watch Inspire so sporadically that, like, to me, the Caesars were a joke, and now they're pretty serious throughout this. So I didn't really know what was kind of up with that. As they were really coming across pretty, you know, like on par with the new movement team. The new movement did a pretty good job of stooging at times. It felt spot festy kind of throughout. Heat on Gattacus was good. Gattacus was a decent seller. Allie really carried her team. Robin still super green, it seems. She tags her in to kind of do almost nothing except for get Germaned. Breaks down a lot more. And then finally, Alley Cat is able to get the pin again, this time using the Ripcord headbutt. I think last time kind of the same thing. 2 3/4 star. I think this could have used a lot more focus and a lot more clear definition. I thought having Roxy come in and be the manager for them to counter Chris True should have, if you're going to make a big deal out of it to start the match, it should have played more into the match itself. I really felt like it was overlooked after the opening of the match. The managers didn't really matter anymore, which I think hurt the match for me. In general, I think that could have helped play up the whole thing a little bit more.
Yeah, I think part of it is I think Roxy's not a naturally trained person, so I don't think she can take bumps. I might be wrong. So I think that's a problem they booked themselves into. Yeah, this thing did nothing for me. I gave it a star and a half. I thought it was just eh, and like it kind of just kind of a mess. Then we got Ryan Davidson versus Jordan Lennox. I was looking forward to this match because I'm a huge I'm all in on Davidson. I think Lennox has potential. Davidson is a guy. I mean, I think I've said it before. A guy I really like. His offense is very credible. Davidson's another guy who doesn't work in a bubble. He engages the crowd. Davidson trash talking to start, and Davidson feels like he's like one of these old territorial heels where he could have survived for 20 years going from territory to territory, working underneath. But being an important cog where he's working. I like Davidson turning his fist into the position, into the rib cage. I like the modified abdominal stretch. I like Davidson working the center of Lennox. Lennox tries a comeback. Loved it. I really enjoyed Davidson's power slam cutoff. I thought the finish was shit. Where finally, Jordan Lennox finally makes a comeback, makes a big dive, and then they end up brawling on the floor for a double count out, double DQ, whatever it was. I didn't think he got to that where that hatred for the finish, but I thought it played to Jordan Lennox's strength, which was his selling, him fighting underneath, having some little fun comebacks, and allowed Davidson to work on top because he can eat up time, he can. You know, he has offense that looks credible. So, I mean, they play both their roles well. But I feel they have a better match in them. I give it 2.5 stars. What about you?
I also gave it 2.5. Same feeling. I think that it was good when it lasted, but it didn't feel like it made sense for it to turn into a double count out like that. It didn't feel like the brawl had heated up to the point where they would disregard the count out to the finish. I could see Davidson, you say that he doesn't care either way because he's just there to fight, but I don't think that I saw it from Lennox as to why he would give up his chance to win the match. That said, I did love Davidson grinding on Lennox. I think that it helped build a lot of sympathy for Lennox because of just how good his heat on top looked. Pre-match fight graphic, I think it was weird that Jordan Lennox looked like he was a video game character while Davidson looked like a picture of a real person. I don't know if they airbrushed the fuck out of that picture or what it is, but that was kind of interesting. 2.5 star, like I said. But the real story out of this match is the fiery-ass promo that Davidson cuts on the end, talking about how he's sick of flip-de-doo wrestlers and all that bullshit taking over his business, and he's going to fight for the honor of pro wrestling. And I bought into it and loved it and thought it was a great promo.
Yeah, doesn't it feel like you could do something with Davidson? Like, he should be working other places?
Yes, and that's why I said when I saw him in that tournament that I thought he should have won the tournament, because it felt like it made sense for him to have the Lawless Darkness thing. But, you know, I guess I don't know what's going on with him or what his deal is, why he doesn't get bookings outside of here or in other places. Because, yeah, he's definitely got something there. I think he'd fit right in on that Nova Pro show.
I mean, I don't know a lot about him, but the first time I saw him was last year, I think, or earlier this year. I'm like, man, there's something about him that I like. And the more I've seen him, the more everything he does is credible, you know? I mean, he's not throwing out 4-star match or anything, but he's putting on really good matches and entertaining matches. And he does stuff like this promo, which is really good. So keep an eye on him. He was one of the guys I was really impressed with today on the show. Then we get this fucking Joey Ryan Dick Plex challenge. I know it's 2017, and I mean, bottom line, he got over with the crowd. The crowd, of course, loves Joey Ryan. I'm like fucking Cornette. I don't fucking get it, and I don't. I think he's a waste of fucking money. But I mean, first he does this stupid three-way with some green guys, and then we end up him wrestling Evan Gelestico, who I guess one of the angles was he lost in a match with the Ghosts. And you know what? Bottom line is I view everything that Joey Ryan does as a farce, and I hate farces in wrestling. I like comedy in wrestling, but this is a farce when you're making fun of what you're doing, kind of. Like, it's not like wink, wink, yeah, you're in on the joke with me. It's like, hey, this is a joke, and all of wrestling's a joke. It's not real. So neither is just you shouldn't take this serious. Hey, you shouldn't take the fucking main event serious. I think Joey Ryan's a massive detriment to wrestling. I don't care that a lot of people love him, and they do. He obviously has a huge following. People laugh at this shit. He gets over, but I think it's absolute garbage. Go on. What do you think?
Can we just not? I agree with you. And I'm not. I don't even want to talk about this. Promoters, don't waste your money on Joey Ryan. Don't let Joey Ryan bury members of your roster by beating them constantly in stupid, fake, bullshit comedy matches. Just don't. You talk about him and it being a farce and wrestling is a joke to him. If you look at his tweets and everything, he makes these comments that in a moment or in a second you might think, yeah, you know, that's it. I totally agree with you, and fuck it, everything is cool. But if you stop and think about it for a moment, it just goes to show exactly what you said. He doesn't take wrestling seriously. He recently tweeted something out. The sentiments, I can totally understand. It was along the lines of, I lost to, you know, 12 out of the 32 women that were in the Mae Young Classic, and it hasn't affected my bookings. That's perfectly fine, and I get where he's coming from in a lot of ways, but it also comes across a lot like, I don't give a shit about the concept of wrestling. It's a big joke, and isn't it funny that I still make money out of it even though I lose to women? And that's the part of it that kind of makes you go, oh yeah, this guy's kind of a dick, and he kind of doesn't take the business seriously, and it is kind of bad for wrestling as a whole, even if it can be entertaining to some people sometimes. So yeah, fuck Joey Ryan.
I honestly, this is like I think the worst segment of not what we're talking about, but I think the Joey Ryan and the fans is the worst segment of indie wrestling humanly possible.
Yes, I completely agree.
I think it has no place in it, but it does somehow, and I fucking hate it. All right. Then we get Biss comes out wearing a Sammy Guevara / Justin Bieber mask. I thought he did it. I thought because they've had this like feud for like freaking forever. I thought Biss as Sammy Guevara was pretty good. I thought he did the ring entrance pretty solid. And we send sets up a Sammy Guevara versus Jeff Cobb versus Matthew Palmer versus Mr. X match. I enjoyed the segment. What about you?
Yeah, Mr. X isn't like a actual person that wrestles.
No, it's a mystery person.
It's just a mystery person, right? Yeah. That's what I assumed. So I liked the segment. I thought it was good. I liked the Bieber mask and the coming out to the song, and I think it works for the promo. I didn't realize that it had been a long-running angle, so I thought maybe it was just because he was upset about him missing this show, but if it's building out of bigger stuff, then I like it even more, actually.
Yeah, it's a long-running angle where Biss would always book Sammy Guevara with all these tough guys, and Sammy would end up winning, like the Ray Rowe match. He booked him against Eddie Kingston, you know, stuff like, gosh, you should whip his ass. I'm sure he booked him against Keith Lee because, you know, in storyline, Keith Lee should have whipped his ass, you know. But Sammy still keeps on fucking getting the better end of it. Even though he gets his ass kicked in all these matches. Then we get a Roxy Castillo promo or whatever. Anything you would say about it?
Yeah, knowing that she can't do anything on top of it just makes it, I don't know, it just makes it feel pointless. I don't see what good she really serves for anybody that she's put with.
She's over, though. The crowd loves her. Okay. So is Joey Ryan. Then we got Gino versus Cody Lane. versus Terrell Tempo. What are your thoughts here?
Terrell Tempo is super over. The crowd is definitely into him. I really wish that I had got to see him at that show in San Diego that got canceled. I think he looks good. I think he's got great action. The crowd loves him. I think he spent a lot of time on the floor here, but whatever. He comes back in and gets the hot finish that the crowd really buys into. This was pretty quick. Gino looked good. Lane was okay. Tempo is over as fuck and really knows how to play kind of his power game and do all of his stuff. Tempo cuts a post-match promo that really makes me feel like he's got the poise to be, and he comes across feeling super real. I think he's got what it would take to kind of break out a little bit more and get over. I think he's definitely a blue chipper and a guy that they should be getting into. The match overall, I gave 2 3/4 stars. I thought that they did a really good job working the three-way, even if they did take powders for long periods of time. I mean, people kind of shit on that as being a trope in multi-man wrestling, but it works, whatever. I'm not going to complain about it every time just because someone takes a break in the match so that you can have a match that actually works, you know, rather than just trying to force in three-way spots that don't necessarily look good or make any sense. So, whatever. I thought that the match overall was all right.
Yeah, I thought Gino looked okay. He was a little soft in some spots, so I thought he needs to tighten up his work a little bit. I think Cody Lane has gotten so much better in the last year. I think Lane now needs to work more on his psychology and working the crowd. He seems like he has some moves and they can do this and that. So now I think he needs to work on some of that. Tempo, again, yeah, he's great look. He's believable when looking at him. I mean, he's one of those guys, man. If it was a still picture, he'd be a multimillionaire. Crowd loves him. I still don't understand it. I don't get him. I haven't seen a whole lot from him where I've been impressed with. So, you know, he's booked against Dominic Granini at IHWE in November. And I'm thinking of going to that show and because Dominic's working. So I'm hoping Tempo can stand up to him. But Tempo is such a hit or miss guy for me. Sometimes he's there and I enjoy his matches, and sometimes it's like, eh. But I thought this was a solid match, 2.5 stars. And then Tempo with his promo, he gets over Steve Areno on November 12th. And I'm interested in seeing that because I think Steve Areno is a great piece of talent. I think he can have a really good match with Tempo. Then we get Kylie Rae versus Vanessa Craven. What were your thoughts on this one, Timothy?
I really kind of felt like they did a good job before the bell rang, making it very clear who was the heel and who was the face. I thought that Craven, for the most part, looked good when she was doing her monster spots and working vicious on the top, and then she slows it down and is methodical. But I just didn't get it from Ray. I mean, I'd like to see a lot more spunk. I'm not seeing the underdog, you know, kind of selling from her that's getting me into it. I feel like there's a very, I hate to say it because it feels bad, but like this kind of Bayley knockoff thing. And I think like Delilah Doom does a similar thing, but does it really well. But I feel like a lot of places think like, oh, if we book like a kind of quirky babyface underdog girl, the crowds will just get into them no matter what. And they don't really have the personality, or maybe they do have the personality, but they don't have the ring work. And that kind of just, to me, it just feels like a bad knockoff and it just doesn't work for me. Then Kylie gets, you know, kind of gets her sloppy counter of a power bomb to set up the pin, gets the win, 1.5 stars for me. She, you know, Ray with the post-match promo, she's clearly more invested in her character than her in ring. And, I just don't see it. I think she needs to step it up in ring to have something for me to sink my teeth into more than just, you know, this character that I'm supposed to care about. I want to see that character in the wrestling ring as well.
Fair enough. I kind of like Kylie Rae, though. I like her even using her size, and I thought she was good, sold well underneath Kylie Rae. Craven cuts her off. I thought this was solid stuff. I'll give it 2.5 stars. Yeah, you absolutely hated it. Fair enough. Then we got ACH versus Rex Andrews. And I thought, in-ring, technician-wise, I thought Andrews looked absolutely fantastic here. And I'm wondering why I've never seen this guy work, because he really impressed me. Did he impress you in this match?
Very much impressed me. I was, like, comparing some of his work here in my notes to Kyle O'Reilly and Zack Sabre Jr.
I mean, yeah.
his technical style, his arm focus, the way he mixed in strikes with everything. I thought he looked great.
Yeah, like the guy who runs the promotion, Biss, who's, you know, who's doing the Guevara impersonation. He has a great eye for talent. Like, I mean, he had you know, he's booking Keith Lee and Guevara before anybody. Now they're gone national. It feels like Andrews and Tempo and Matthew Palmer are kind of like his next level guys who he's going to start trying to get over. Davison's another guy. He just finds ways of restocking the cupboards, and he's done a really good job. And I think Rex Andrews is another gold mine for him, giving him exposure before anybody else is really giving him true exposure. And Inspire Pro, you know, it's one of those promotions where people like respect it, but you know, you're not going to go there and going to see indie dream matches, because they're not going to be paying, money to see Ricochet or Kyle O'Reilly or who have you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean, and I agree with your kind of breakdown of that, and that they have great matches and they have great young guys, but they're not breaking the bank, so it's kind of smart.
Yeah, exactly, doing the local thing. I thought this was really good. We got some fun, real fun mat work early on. And Andrews is impressing the hell out of me. Real back and forth early. Like Andrews shooting for the submissions. Big kick to ACH's arm. And Andrews with the key lock, and he's all over this arm. And ACH is selling the arm for all he's worth. Loved ACH's knee drop. It looked fucking nasty, like it could break Andrews' nose. And again, I'm loving ACH selling that arm. The synergy to ACH doing like, he was doing like the, like, you know how they used to do the YMCA? So ACH is doing that to the ACH, and he's selling the arm while he's trying to do the C or the H or the A. I loved it. Again, selling that arm. ACH with the bullet tope. Big lariat by ACH was really nice, and he sold the arm again. Andrews doesn't want the interference. I like that. ACH with the big Backlund arm lift. The Fujiwara spot might have been one of the best ones versions of it I've seen in a while. Really well done. I hated how they got to the finish. I didn't like how they got there, but I give it 3.5 stars. Really, really interesting stuff. And then we get this interview with Andrews and Chris True backstage, already setting the stage for a breakup, because I feel like they're going to make Andrews that focal point of this company sooner than later. Just off this performance. I know ACH raved about working with him on Twitter. This is a guy who looks like he should be involved right now and stuff, and be part of Catchpoint. That's how good the guy was. What would you think there, Timothy?
Yeah, I think he should have been in Catchpoint a couple months back, honestly, because unfortunately Evolve and Catchpoint and all that have fallen off a cliff now. But I mean, obviously, I agree with you on everything you had to say about Rex Andrews. I think part of what hurt this particular match for me, though, was just the very clear storyline stuff that's going on that affected the heel-face dynamics of the match itself. I think Rex Andrews was super focused on the arm, looked great, but then he's playing up this kind of, he doesn't want to win, cheap win, and he's trying to get the new movement away, and it did hurt me, because then I'm thinking, like, he was still kind of supposed to be heel, but also I'm to the point with ACH where I can't take him serious of babyface even in the slightest. Just because he comes across like such a fucking troll, he's just so cocky and just obnoxious. So it's really hard for me to get into him as a babyface at all. So that hurts the match for me as well.
Yeah, you've never seen him do the 30-minute match with Tempo where he total goes heel, full-fledged heel in it, have you?
No, but it sounds like something I would actually really enjoy.
Full-fledged heel, total Memphis style. I mean, it's not about big moves or anything. It's all about storyline. I was blown away by it.
That sounds like something I'm going to check out.
So character-driven. Yeah, but you gotta be into that type of style wrestling. I think it would fly over a lot of people's heads.
Yeah, I definitely got to check that out. I think I'd like it a lot. That said, I think another issue that I would have with this is that Rex, his offense looks too good, that he gave too much to ACH for him to, like, come back, honestly. I think his offense, like, him giving him so much almost made Rex's really great-looking offense come across a little bit too weak, because it wasn't enough to put away ACH. But that said, I thought really great match, 3-star, could have used a little bit more. I think leading up into the finish, it felt a little bit out of nowhere, but whatever, it works.
That's how I was. Like, I didn't like really how they got into the finish at all.
Yeah. That said, Rex Andrews is a guy that, if you're like me, if you listen to this show and you find yourself agreeing with my taste or with Pete's taste, probably more likely, he's a guy you should be checking out. Because he's really fucking good. I mean, this one match, this one showing with ACH, he really showed to me that he's got a lot of upside, a lot of potential, and a guy that's definitely on the rise to be followed.
Damn straight. That leads us to the main event of the Heavy Hearts and JoJo Bravo versus Vega Doom, originally supposed to be Areno, and we have NWA champion Tim Storm, who is Davey Vega's former tag partner in Inspire Pro, returns. And what do you think of this?
I thought it's big news for the newly revitalized NWA, right? To have their champion showing up on Inspire Pro's YouTube channel. I'm going to assume that this show happened before everything went down, but it was interesting having them talk about how they didn't think they'd see the NWA champion in an Inspire Pro ring, and how there's all this kind of upheaval backstage with the NWA, and then how that all kind of comes together. But I thought Storm, obviously, he's got his gimmick. He definitely works it. People get into it. It's tough for me just because I don't buy into him the way that everyone does, but it, you know, whatever, it works. Heavy Hearts, I think that this was one of those weird matches you talked about earlier about tag team rules going out the window. I think this is one of those weird matches where certain people have special rules, because it seemed like the Heavy Hearts were working a tornado tag match at times. They both spent so much time in the ring without getting counted or tagging or anything that it really just, it was kind of interesting. I don't know how that works. But that said, I thought Vega's comeback looked great. I mean, after Doom had gotten worked over, him coming back with the hot tag that sets up, I mean, really the story of the match, of the accidental kick to Tony Storm's head. I thought in that comeback, he looked really good. Hearts are just in there over constantly. They're in the match. I think they definitely play their heel spot really well, but I think that they could definitely use a little bit of that, how do you work the ref without ruining his credibility kind of training. I think you got a third man there. You got Jay Sirius. Why is he not, distracting the ref more for you to help? I did like Jay Sirius wanting to get in there and take advantage of Vega when he thinks he's beaten down enough so he could maybe get the win, but he doesn't have a chance, and Vega's able to almost come back on him. Storm turning on Vega for kicking him in the head I thought was great, especially for how it plays into the post-match. I thought that was done really well.
And there's also a story there because of originally Storm and Vega were the tag champs. Storm became the NWA champ and had to vacate his belt, and Delilah Doom won it and got it.
Yeah, and I definitely like that playing off of it's. It really plays into the post-match promo that I thought, like I said, I think is done really well. I love Doom. I mean, I talked about it earlier, the Doom fighting from underneath, trying to fight everyone off by herself, but it's just, she's just not able to, because it's just too much for her. I thought she brought that fire. She brought that intensity. She brought that character, really bought into her in that final stretch, really got behind her, and you really wanted to see her win. So then when she loses, it really, really sucks, and it really kind of hurts your feelings almost. And then, the fact that she loses her title, but Vega's keeping his title. Now he's had his third partner, I think, in this same tag team title run. He's on his third partner, which is just kind of absurd but great at the same time. And you don't really know where this is going next. 3.5 stars for the match. Then I talk about that post-match promo. I love it, as it really shows Vega. I mean, from promo to promo, this is a storyline, even with how little I watch Inspire, I've kind of understood somehow, because they've done such a great job telling the story with the few promos and stuff that I've seen. You really see that Vega has changed. In the beginning, when he first started teaming with Delilah Doom, he was like, you know, I don't want anything to do with you. If you lose your belt, that whatever, I don't care. I'm keeping my title. All this, and then, but then here he feels bad. He's sad that she lost her belt. He's talking her up, saying, "Well, you still got your title. I still got my title. We'll, you know, we'll be fine." Tony Storm or Tim Storm shows up and puts it over the top by even making it very clear, like, "You fucking changed, man. You used to be my tag team partner, and now you're just like." You suck. You feel bad for this girl. You don't care about losing the title. You know, you don't care as much about this, and you kicked me in the face. And I just thought it was really great storytelling, good action, good match. All in all, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I enjoyed it too. I gave it 2.5 stars. It was a lot of fun action. I prefer the heavy hearts more in the middle of the pack than on top. Same thing with JC Sirius. I did enjoy the joke where they called him seriously fat, or seriously heavy. I enjoyed that. And I always enjoy Davey Vega. He's a treat. And I mean, coming out of this, it seems really weird. Not weird, but, you know, I've heard Alley Cat's now thinking of moving. She's moving out of Texas. And Delilah Doom was just tweeting that she's leaving Texas. So seems like, you know, a lot of these people are getting out and going to try to get showcases. We're trying to get bookings in other parts of the world, and try to get over. And you know what? That's part of it. And in Inspire Pro, they're such a smartly run with this and identifying talent. That, I mean, they brought in the last couple months. They brought in different pieces of talent that have every opportunity, every chance to get over. And I believe they can do it, and I'm looking forward to their final showing in November 12th. So, again, I'd give the show a thumbs up. I enjoyed it. The only thing I actually hated on it was probably the Joey Ryan match, and I thought they didn't totally drag it out, but I thought they went through it quick enough where it didn't drag down the rest of the show. And you got a way out of it where you completely, by the end of the night, you completely forgot about that shenanigans. What would you make of the show overall?
Overall, great show. Fuck Joey Ryan. Loved the main event. I thought even if it wasn't a 5-star classic or anything like that, I think it told a great story and really kind of tugged at your heartstrings and progressed the storylines and all that. So, I mean, it's really hard to shit on a show like this. You got to see some new guys that you may have never seen before have some good matches, get to expose to some people, see some other guys in the mid card start to elevate their stock. I mean, Inspire Pro, like you said, it's a company that I think people who know about it know that they're running good shows, they're running great stuff, but maybe aren't paying enough attention to it. And maybe if they start getting stuff out here more, they did the live stream, doing VODs, doing the YouTube, maybe moving forward they get something out there. Who knows? Maybe you deal with Powerbomb TV, as I know Dylan is probably listening to this. Just tell, you know, maybe something out of that would be good for them moving forward to get a little bit more notoriety.
Yep. Man, anything you got to plug, buddy?
Oh, same old, same old. Interesting interview coming out this next week with Alex from, I guess she was from Ringside Revolution, done some other writing on Joshi Wrestling, and just a really good friend and someone who I really enjoy their work. I'm just a big fan of hers, so I got to interview her about what she takes important, what she cares about in wrestling, what she cares about in being a journalist, and it was a lot of fun. Otherwise, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling, CWF FanCon, October 14th and 15th. Get on it. Coincides with the CWF Rumble. Have a great weekend, great week, and just keep on supporting wrestling. Later.